Welcome to Urban Forum Northwest with your host, Eddie Rye Jr. And the sun is shining today in Seattle, Washington. And I have a shining star on the line with me right now. Her name is Representative Sharon Tomiko Santos. She represents the 37th District, and she's chair of the House Education Committee. And she's been a staunch advocate for all communities of color. You can witness the building on 22nd and Jackson, which is the Central District Community Preservation and Development Authority, now known as the McKinney Center for Community and Economic Development. That building was bought here by Reverend McKinney with the Seattle Opportunities Industrialization Center. And all the manpower funding was cut by one President Ronald Reagan. And thankful Sharon Tomiko Santos and her legislation, House Bill 1918 in 2019, returned the building to the community. So welcome. A lot of accomplishments to speak of, past and present, Representative Santos. Welcome to Urban Forum Northwest. And tell us how you're doing and what happened during the short session down in Olympia.
Well, good afternoon, Eddie, and thank you again for having me as a guest on your show. I always feel like this is my welcome back home to reality when I get to come on the show and give you a quick rundown or overview of the legislative session. This year, I will tell you, I've been in the legislature now for 26 years, and honestly, this has been the most brutal legislative session that I have experienced. And I think part of it is while we did have a an in-person short legislative session 2 years ago, we were still operating. I think that was our first time back in person. So we had all kinds of different rules that we were practicing to try and keep and maintain the ability to do the work as we're trying to navigate hybrid legislating. And so this is really the first time since COVID that we've been back in person for policy making without those COVID rules. And I can just tell you that the pent up expectations and demands and needs and the high desires of both members who are still fairly new to the process, as well as our communities that are experiencing still a lot of challenges, both from the fallout of COVID, but also honestly from before then. And it just made for a very difficult supplemental year. So, the short session is 60 days versus our regular session during odd numbered years is 105 days. In addition, during a supplemental year, we are not putting together a brand new budget because we put the budget together in the previous year, the odd year, because we put together two-year budgets. So technically, we're only supposed to tweak around the edges and take into account changes in revenue, changes in caseload forecast, and that sort of thing. Well, for all three budgets, I think the desires sort of outpaced our resources, and it just made it very interesting. Let me give you an example. Now, I don't sit on the Transportation Committee, so it will be good if you get somebody who has actually sat on the Transportation Committee to give you more accurate numbers. But by way of a sense, all of the packages that we funded last year in our transportation budget have now come in at 50%, 100%, and more than 100% over what the expectation was of spending last year. So that means that we are either having to cut programs or we're having to rearrange the timing of these. And as you know, these are bricks and mortar programs. We see how it's affecting our commutes on a daily basis, but the costs have gone out the roof. And so technically, we did not adopt any new transportation projects for the supplemental year. It's a little bit different in the capital budget and the operating budget size. We were able to squeeze out some money for some projects that we were very worried we would not have money for. So an example, which I know is probably near and dear to your heart, Eddie, is and I know it is near and dear to the hearts of many in our district, is the plans for the Garfield Superblock. That is an extraordinary project that has been on ice for over 20 years. It was a promise made to the community by the city of Seattle more than 20 years ago, and then the project got dropped. Well, the people in the community who have invested their blood, sweat, and tears into this project have been waiting all of this time to be able to begin and complete the project. And I'm really happy that we were finally able to get some money towards that project. But it was a fluke because there was unspent money in other places. And you and I have had the conversation in the past about why the state doesn't like to fund projects if the money's not going to get spent right away. So this is an example of where people didn't use the money, so we put it to an immediate use. I mean, I could talk about some policies, but I'd be very interested in knowing if you have any specific questions.
Well, I would like just like to specifically know what would be the high points of the short session in terms of legislation that you championed or prioritized.
Yeah, well, I will tell you that one of the bills that I prioritized is sort of it was a little bit of an under the radar kind of piece of legislation, but I think it has a lot of implications for anybody who has a child or grandchild or a loved one, a neighbor child that's going to school. And that is, we were able to pass House Bill 1239. We are waiting to see whether or not the governor is going to sign it or whether the governor is going to veto a portion of it. I'm hoping not. But this bill came about because a little boy who is in the third grade, very curious, happy little boy, started coming home and was starting to be very withdrawn and not wanting to go to school and showing lots of signs of trauma. Well, it turns out that this little boy was being disciplined in the classroom by a teacher who was pulling on his ear and sort of, by pulling on his ear, forcing the child to comply with whatever it was that the educator was wanting to do. Well, to my surprise, and you know, I've been involved in education for all 26 years, and I started even before then as an education activist. To my surprise, I found out that there is a reference in the state criminal code that gives educators an affirmative defense when they are disciplining a child to require compliance. I was shocked and I could not, and of course, I didn't know it existed because I never spend time in the criminal codes if I can help it. And so part of this bill, the heart of this bill, was to eliminate that positive defense for compliance for disciplinary reasons, because again, it should not be something that is put into the criminal code when we have all kinds of children who are being traumatized as if they, and they certainly don't need any additional reasons to be traumatized. It gives family, students, educators, and the public a single front door by which to file complaints about the education system. They don't have to know anything about the education system and where it goes because that's very arcane. So the system itself will do the sorting and refer every complaint to the lowest level of dispute resolution so that people can get their responses and their complaints acted upon in an immediate fashion. The other thing that this legislation does is to require the Educator Standards Board to look into adopting what we call a code of ethics. This is an aspirational professional development code, different from a code of conduct, which is more disciplinary for educators, but really to help educators improve their own craft. And so I am very proud of this legislation because that little boy who was in the third grade when he first started encountering this is now a middle schooler. And he was able to find his voice when he came down with his parents to testify on this bill. And we came to find out that he wasn't the only child that had encountered this educator, that in fact, there were adults who had had this very same educator at the very same school who came out saying, I lost my love of learning. I lost my desire to be in school after that experience. And this is now 20, 30 years after the fact. And that teacher was still teaching. Oh, Eddie, I think you are on mute.
I'm
Sorry.
telling everybody else here on mute, I'm on mute, but I'm said you're an outstanding advocate for the people, not only in your district, but across any citizen or youth that's been done wrong. You've stepped up. There's another program that you have championed, and Ram Dixit, who is the president of the MLK Gandhi Empowerment Initiative, have joined us. And we know that you have been a supporter and a champion of that as well. So if you can hang on for a couple of minutes, I'd like to have you a little further in the dialogue. But Ram Dixit, why don't you share with our listening audience the good news about the grant that we were able to secure through the efforts of Senator Patty Murray and Congressman Adam Smith. So it's going to bring a unique program to the underserved community to get folks who are not technologically astute up and running in that area. So go right ahead, Ram.
Hey, Eddie, first of all, hey, thank you so much for having me. And I am so excited to give everybody an update on the MLK Gandhi Empowerment Initiative. Just some background about this. As many of in the early 90s, we had the internet revolution, massive explosion of wealth in the middle class. But here's the disappointing thing about that. That largely passed over a large section of our society, the underserved, underrepresented communities, and they did not have a seat at the table at the internet revolution. Here's what's going on today. We're on the cusp of another huge revolution driven by AI and cloud. And so what we're doing with the MLK Gandhi Empowerment Initiative is to really drive technology enablement, targeting underserved communities, training them on these next generation of technologies, whether it's AI, whether it's cloud, some of these other areas, so that these folks, they can move up the chain, get jobs that need technology, higher paying, higher wage jobs with benefits. And so I'm really excited to be able to launch this. We're going to be going live probably in the next 45 days with our first cohort of students. And Representative Santos, while I have you on here, first of all, you were one of our earliest supporters in the state of Washington. So thank you. Thank you. We would not have gotten here but for your support. And our other two champions, I do want to call out, Congressman Adam Smith and Senator Patty Murray at the federal level. They have been huge advocates for this program because we think this can move the needle for these communities. And so looking forward to working with the community here, Eddie.
I want to say that tentatively right now, the papers have not been signed. I want to let people know, public disclosure, I'm the chair of the board of the MLK Gandhi Empowerment Initiative. And a lot of people say, why MLK Gandhi? Well, let me give you a little history. When Gandhi fought to liberate India from British rule, there was one young man who was very young at Morehouse College by the name of Martin Luther King Jr. And he studied Gandhi's nonviolent, passive way to bring about change and emulated that to get African Americans, Black people, African descent of the United States, enslaved at that time, was very many African people over here, but to get us our civil rights in 64, our voting rights in 65. And he later went over to India with Mrs. King to just pay homage to the individual, even though Gandhi had passed away when he went over, but to pay tribute to him. And that's why it's been a successful mode of operation for people fighting for rights. A passive, nonviolent protest brought about a lot of change. Because a lot of people don't realize that African Americans didn't have civil rights until 64, did not have voting rights until 65. And history will tell you that a lot of Black folks died just trying to get the right to vote. So this going back to MLK Gandhi Empowerment Initiative, right now, it's almost certain that we'll be at New Beginnings Christian Fellowship Church with the first classes. And Ron, why don't you share with the listening audience how many people will be going in tentatively right now? And also, we have a advisory board of 22 people. We've had well, Representative Jesse Johnson, along with Representative, and he's still on the advisory board, works for the treasurer's office. And we had another advisory board member pass away, Joe Staten, who was the executive director of the Central Area Youth Association. But we have members of clergy, 25 different people who will be recommending students to participate in the program. And that approach, as you we agree, would be better if we have people with an input and have an interest in the students who are going to go through this program. And if we can talk Marie Carosa and some other folks and provide the money for these stipends, we want to make sure our folks are taken care of. And Steve Gray, the chief operating officer at New Beginnings Christian Fellowship. Happy birthday, Stephen. His birthday was yesterday while we were meeting up there. We didn't know he was having a birthday. He works on his birthday. But anyway,
just to add here to your point, you know, we're going to be starting out sometime in mid-April, late April. A first cohort of students, we're looking at about 25 students to start out with. But here's the expectation, here's the exciting thing. Over the next 12 months, we anticipate to target over 250 students. And again, huge shout out to our advisory board. This first year, we're going to be looking for nominations from the advisory board. We're going to be talking to every single prospective student, because again, it's really going to be the level of effort the students put in, the motivation. We've got a lineup of really strong technology leaders who are going to be coming into these classes to deliver the training. And the other really exciting thing, Eddie and team, is, we're building partnerships with companies, because ultimately this training is not about training for the sake of training, but it's really how can the students that go through our training progress in their career, get higher paying jobs that typically need technology expertise or, technology literacy? Or how can some of the students that go through our programs get new jobs that leverage the technology learning training that they take? And so we're talking to a number of companies that are committing to interview our students and give them those opportunities to interview and ultimately get jobs.
You had also mentioned that there was a company that looks like they're going to be a supporter, and that company was worth quite a few $100 billion.
Indeed, but we're in early stages of discussion. At the right time, we would like to, go public with the names. But rest assured, we're talking to a number of companies to get into those agreements where they will be interviewing our students who go through the MLK Gandhi Empowerment Initiative. So stay tuned on that. We're working through some of those fine details.
Shout out to the board members, Dom, Carolyn Riley Payne, Ernie Dunstan, Dominique Davis, the Community Passageways, myself, and Ron, the president. Sharon, we really thank you for all your advocacy and support. And you had a chance to look at the classroom that we'll be using at New Beginnings Christian Fellowship. Just like to have your impressions of the meeting we had yesterday at the church.
I'm really excited. I think Ram said it well. It's been a long time since I first heard about this proposal from your mouth to my ears, Eddie Rye, that just the rationale, the compelling vision that you have here, bringing together disparate groups that most people would say are not in alignment with one another, that there's a lot that of a mythology and unfortunate narrative that pits Asians and Blacks against one another. And I think this is exactly the opposite narrative, that we actually can be inspired by one another, and that we can be dependent on one another and learn from one another. When I went to visit the classroom with all of you yesterday, I think what was very exciting to me was to feel, in person, the energy that was transferring from one individual to the other. So, I mean, obviously, you were there, Eddie, Ram was there. Mr. Gray was there, and then you had two young people who you also have
Yeah,
involved.
DeMarlon Cisney and Miracle was her name. Yeah.
Correct. And just to hear everyone's sort of thoughts about how to move forward, and everyone bringing, we were in a house of God, so I'm going to just say everyone bringing their own gifts to tithe to this project was a very palpable feeling. And it was a great space listening to Stephen and Ram talk about, and then Ram, you had a colleague as well with you, Vivek. Talk about how you wanted the classroom set up and how you needed certain kinds of whiteboards. It was almost as if I could see the room being assembled right before my very eyes. So I'm excited to be part of this as well.
And
Thank you.
it's early days. It's been a long road to get to this point. But again, as they say, proof is in the pudding. And now the way I look at it, now the hard work starts, because it's, our advisory board, they're hard at work looking at which students to nominate, to refer to the program. And then we're going to be doing the training and the recruiting. And then hopefully we can come back to the community, report on positive results, and start to scale this out. But the hard work starts now.
And I want to give a shout out to Bob Armstead, who had helped us a great deal as a consultant. Bob recently had surgery. Hopefully he's getting well soon. But Bob Armstead is the president of the National Association of Minority Contractors, the Washington State chapter, and really helped a great deal in getting the whole package together. And he's going to do some more work for us too. We appreciate that. And then you met DeMarlon Cisney, who has started out. He looks like he's about 24, but I think he's a little older than that. But he spent time with Amazon Web Services, has his own company now, Info at Hop Services. And we'll be looking forward to him and his expertise, as well as reaching out to some folks who are some of his peers to also get involved.
Yeah, and
So.
the other guy I'd like to call out is Vivek Malhotra. He was there at the church yesterday,
Ram, would you repeat his
ex-Microsoft.
name?
Vivek Malhotra, longtime technology executive, spent a lot of time at Microsoft, at Google. And it's leaders like Vivek who sort of understand, who've been in the trenches in high tech. That's the perspective we want to bring these students on. What's it going to take to succeed? What do companies look for, and how do you learn? And so I'm really thrilled to have him on board as well, as we grow and scale this program out.
Once the program gets started, Ron, we want to then let people know how much money they can make if they successfully complete the program. And there will be food, and there also will be a stipend. And Marika Rosa, please help us. And Sharon Tomiko Santos, she's doing her best to always help us. So, hey, I want to thank both you guys for all your service to the community and the hood and all the stuff you're going to do, Ron, and all the stuff we hope you're going to continue to do, Representative Sharon Tomiko Santos. We're going to take a quick break. We got Seattle Fire Chief Harold Scoggins on hold, and they just announced with the mayor yesterday there is a new product that now can stop a person from who was ODing on opioids and also has something of a preventive effect. So we're going to take this quick break and come back to him. You guys are welcome to stay on and listen to the chief if you like. So, Eric, let's take the quick break and come back.
Hi, my name is Mian Rice, the Diversity of Contracting Director for the Port of Seattle. As a public agency, the Port of Seattle serves the community, and our investments should benefit everyone who lives and works here. The Port is committed to equity, diversity, and inclusion, and to leveling the playing field. That means continuing to open doors to contracting opportunities to all, especially women and minority-owned and disadvantaged businesses. How can you participate? List your business in Vendor Connect, a database of contractors. Attend PortGen workshops to learn how to do business with the port. Learn more about contracting opportunities at portseattle.org. For more information on operating a concessions at Seattle Tacoma International Airport, visit lease.ctacshops.com.
At Sound Transit, we not only connect more people to more places, we're making life better for all. We're connecting diverse neighborhoods to an entire region of opportunities, like jobs and school. If you have an Orca card, you can just tap and go. We have reduced fares for seniors and riders with disabilities. For adults with lower incomes, check out Orca Lift and pay just a dollar for your ride. To plan your trip or to learn more, visit us at soundtransit.org.
Find out the latest about your favorite shows on Alternative Talk 1150. Check out 1150kknw.com.
Hey, Eric, spinning some nice music. Eddie, right back. Want to thank Sound Transit's Office of Civil Rights, Equity, and Inclusion, the City of Seattle's Purchasing and Construction Services Department, the Port of Seattle's Diversity Contracting Office, and SeaTac Bar Group, LLC, owned by the two brothers who were Iraqi veterans. So they paid their dues, and now they get to participate in the economy and the fruits of the land. So Seattle Fire Chief Harold Scoggins is my next guest. And recently, I just saw on the news last night, the mayor and the chief announcing a new methodology of dealing with people who are suffering from opioid overdoses. So since the chief knows all about it, I'll let him go ahead and explain to the listeners exactly what is going down.
Sure, absolutely. Eddie, first, thank you for having me. And you know, I want to thank Mayor Harold and the City Council for their ongoing support of all the different things that we do here in the Seattle Fire Department. And just send a special shout out to all the firefighters and all of our professional staff for the amazing work that they do every day. So what we recently announced was we're going to be doing a pilot program where our folks are now deploying buprenorphine to individuals who have overdosed on an opioid of some sort. And this becomes important because those individuals, after they overdose and we bring them back with Narcan or naloxone, in the past, a part of the challenge was not wanting to go into withdrawals. And, you know, that could be very painful and very challenging. So individuals will look for their next opportunity to do the drug again. What buprenorphine does, it removes some of those withdrawal symptoms. So the individual can then start to think clearly and create new pathways for themselves. So it's a pretty exciting opportunity. About 4 weeks ago, we trained 10 of our paramedics, and that's the cohort that's out there deploying it right now. And in about a week or so, we'll be training more, but we have seen some early success. And it's important to note that when the mayor announced his executive order on this issue last May, last June, we put Health 99 in service. We transitioned one of our Health One units into Health 99 and made it purely an overdose response unit. And so between June of 2023 and the present, that unit has been running on overdoses exclusively, two firefighters and a case manager, and really working to try to get individuals into treatment and care. So now this buprenorphine is really going to help us on that front. So we're really excited about what we got going here.
Chief, how many different people do you have working on this in the department? Because it seems to be explosion of overdoses from opioids.
Sure. Well, yeah, I'll give you perspective on the number of overdoses. In 2021, the Seattle Fire Department was responding to 4.7 overdoses per day. In 2022, that number jumped to 10.3 overdoses per day. In 2023, 15.4 overdoses per day. And so far this year, we respond to over 14 overdoses every day. So the team is big. This effort is led by our medical director, Dr. Michael Sayer, who provides us all the oversight, guidance, and education on everything that our paramedics and EMTs do out there in the field, developing the plans on how we train and how we deploy and how to determine the signs and symptoms. Our mobile integrated health manager, John Ehrenfeld, and our mobile integrated health team, and there's so many folks on that team, have been really focusing on this issue to figure out what can we do. We've consulted with different fire departments from around the country, from New Jersey to San Francisco, who are already doing this and seeing some early success. So we saw it as an opportunity, and we see it as an opportunity to grow for the reason that we are here, to help those who are in need. And that's our goal each and every day.
I know I was talking to one of the, I think he's a retired Seattle firefighter who's a medic. He said, we save more people than the hospitals because we get there before they do. And he said, if they're lucky, they make it to the hospital, but it's because of us. So there's not enough gratitude or recognition given to the medics with the Seattle Fire Department, all other fire departments, because, I mean, they are lifesavers. And the brother medic was absolutely right. They do save more lives than the hospital in some cases, you know. So I just... How did you come about getting this product and undertaking this program?
You know, the best ideas come from the ground up. The people, the boots on the ground, doing the heavy lifting each and every day. And that's how this idea came about. It came about from our firefighters. It came about from our mobile integrated health team, our Health One team, and our medical director. And so it's been a few speed bumps and hurdles to get to this point, especially doing something different that hasn't been done is really important. We have to first get approval to do it from the State Department of Health. Then we have to develop a training plan. And so over the last several months, all of these things have been going on. And over the last four weeks, we deployed that training plan after we received approval. And now 3 weeks ago, we actually started deploying buprenorphine. And then haven't gotten stats for this week, but in the first 2 weeks, we've deployed it 8 times. And that's important to note. 8 times mean there have been 8 times that people have overdosed. We have brought them back with Narcan or naloxone and all the other things that you need to do to bring someone back. We have gotten them to a safe place to have a conversation with them before they went into withdrawals, and they have said yes. And that yes is a big deal, because when you deploy the buprenorphine, it lasts for about 24 to 48 hours. It's an opportunity to find treatment. It's an opportunity to find a place for them to be, and it's an opportunity to continue the conversation. So we're really excited about what we're going to be able to do. And like I said, we only have 10 people trained to do this right now. But we're going to train more, and we're going to keep growing the program. And that's why for our community, we're excited, because we're going to give people an opportunity to make a different decision. And that can really have an impact.
Have you shared this with Fire Chief T. Green down in Tacoma and other fire chiefs around the area? I think they all need to know what's going on, because they're having the same OD problems in all the places. So they might as well have a solution for that problem. Have you shared that with them as of yet?
Absolutely. Chief Tory Green and I, along with Spokane's fire chief and Vancouver's fire chief and Bellevue and a few others, we had a call this week. We had a call last week. We've asked them to also write letters of support to get some more approvals that we need. So they're all aware and everyone's watching what we're doing. But we took a very intentional step forward and started the pilot.
Right out of Martin Luther King Jr. County. So Seattle Fire Chief Harold Scoggins, Thank you very much for your time today, and thank you for the work that you and your crew are doing down there, saving lives and putting fires out and helping people. So thank you, sir. We appreciate it.
Thank you. Thank you for having us.
All right, now. My next guest is the Pacific Northwest Area Development Director with the United Negro College Fund, and that's Linda Thompson Black. They're having a gala on Saturday at the CL Convention Center in the Summit Building, and I'll let her talk about what she has done to date with getting those students in college. And I don't know if you've been sued yet by Ed Bloom or Stephen Miller, but anyway, those guys seem to be a terror on denying Black folks, especially African descendants of the United States and slaves. You know, I have to correct President Biden. He says America is a land of immigrants. No, America is a land of Indians, slaves, and immigrants. Okay.
Absolutely.
And people keep talking about we want preferential treatment. How can you call 250 years of slavery, 100 years of Jim Crow, and die in every war, even in segregated units, and you call that preferential? What is preferential about that? That sounds to me like we have earned a piece of the rock. Give us our 40 acres of mule. I'll take 40 acres of downtown Seattle. You can have L.A.
You know what, Eddie? I always agree with you. So when with UNCF, it's an opportunity for us to band together on something that we agree on. And that is that young people need an education and that we want to have equal access to educational opportunities. And that the cost of college is skyrocketing. So if we want, and not everybody does, but we wish they did, if we want every young person to have that opportunity, then we need to support them. And that's what our gala is about. You know, our theme this year is 80 years of changing the world together. And we are fortunate to have a number of wonderful corporate partners. Our presenting sponsors this year are Costco, PACCAR, and Alaska Airlines. And they are the presenting sponsors for our event, but we have many. And we have many who are helping us change the world one student at a time, but they are also corporate partners who've changed the world. You know, Costco, who has changed retail across the country, Amazon, online retail around the world, and Microsoft in computing, and it goes on and on. And so it's that we can be so proud in the Pacific Northwest that we do have these partnerships. We have a long way to go and everybody isn't like-minded, but we want to thank and appreciate the people that are. This year, I'm excited because we are honoring our wonderful superintendent, Brent Jones, who is leading Seattle Public Schools in one of the most difficult times in our school district's history. We are honoring Jim Senegal, who has been a partner to UNCF for three decades, for the last 30 years. He has personally sent four students to historically Black colleges and universities himself, but his company has sent thousands. We are also honoring the Muckleshoot tribe. The Muckleshoot, Jason Elkins will be honored this year. Muckleshoot has been a UNCF partner since I arrived, and we appreciate them, and we share 80 years of struggle. And Nate Miles, we're honoring Nate Miles. We're so excited about it. He's been on our leadership council for 6 years, and Nate retired from Lilly, and he has been an incredible corporate citizen for everyone in the community for, you know, many decades also.
Yes, Nate has definitely made significant contributions.
So we have I think the inspiring stories that you will hear them share and their remarks are a fun part of the evening because it reminds us what we can accomplish individually and collectively. So we have 26 young people who will be receiving scholarships through our portfolio project, which is our college prep program here locally in the Pacific Northwest. Our kids will be there. We're having an impact gallery during our reception, and our kids are going to be sharing what they learned in the portfolio project, what colleges they did actually get accepted to, you know, what are their goals, what is their favorite quote, and they are powerful, and we are so proud of them. We're also going to have an impact gallery with, you know, wonderful leaders from UNCF, from HBCUs that are graduates, such as Martin Luther King, you know, Kamala Harris, Samuel L. Jackson, and many others that will be in our impact gallery, along with our companies who have worked together. So we have a fun-filled evening planned, and we are sold out. I am just so bowled over. We're absolutely sold out. And Eddie, you know, you're my dear friend and colleague, and you've always supported us. So I want to thank you. I have my wonderful friends, Donella Godot and Johnny Dufallings, who helped me when I very first started. So, you know, this is our seventh gala together with along with many partners and friends.
I don't want to say that I want to thank Donella. She wasn't sure I was going to be at a table, but Roman Williams and Sandra Washington will be at a table, and Dr. Dwayne Chappelle has hooked me and Andrea up, y'all. So we will be there at 6 o'clock at the convention center, the Summit Building. And just tell us quickly, give me an estimate of how many students, since you've been at the Northwest Area Development Director for United Negro College Fund, how many students have you sent off to historically Black colleges and universities?
Probably about 400.
Ooh, that's really going to upset Stephen Miller and Ed Bloom.
and you know, we call it an ecosystem because we send kids wherever they want to go. We just want them to go to college. And I advocate for HBCUs, but we advocate for kids just to go have some secondary plan and go to college. So we send kids to UW, Washington State, Western, Portland schools, all over the country. And so we are very proud to do that. Ever since we've been receiving the Gates Foundation funds, we've sent thousands and thousands of students to colleges all over the country. So it's sunsetting, but we have other wonderful corporations who are stepping in to help us continue that.
Well, Ed Bloom and Stephen Miller, they would be disappointed if you sent them to all the schools, including HBCU. I can't understand. We're just in the bullseye for these two guys. I don't know why they're so adamantly opposed to Black folks having equality when some of their relatives could have been saved by Black soldiers during World War II when they were liberating people out of concentration camps. So it's really a strange kind of scenario. But if anybody goes on and check Win Out, Jesse Weinberry has done an outstanding job. They have all the details on those two people. And you need to know who your enemies are. And these folks are enemies. Okay, so you need to know who they are. I want everybody to know that. You need to know who Ed Bloom and Stephen Miller are. Neither one of them would ever be invited to Charlottesville to a neo-Nazi party, but they are who they are.
Yes, we need to be aware. And the sad thing is that when we educate people, they are the solution to so many problems that we are challenged with. We shouldn't be operating from a point of scarcity or racism. We should be operating from abundance and what the opportunities that lie ahead when we educate our beautiful young people. And it's so disheartening that our country is that small-minded. We got to think big. We've got to get our minds right and our hearts right so we can continue to enjoy all of the good fortune that we have.
Because 250 years of free labor would make any country an economic power.
Yeah, it would.
So anyway, Linda Thompson Black, Pacific Northwest Area Development Director for United Negro College Fund. I will see you on Saturday at the 80th event at the Seattle Convention Center, the Summit Building at 6 o'clock. I thank you very much. And thank Danella Godot and Johnny Dufolis for all the work they did with you and continue to do. I know Danella bought two tables. So
yes, she did.
Okay. So anyway, so thank you very much. And we'll talk. We'll see you on Saturday, if not before.
Okay. Thank you.
All right.
Bye-bye.
So we'll take this last break.
At Sound Transit, we not only give people more reliable ways to get around, we're connecting diverse neighborhoods to an entire system of opportunities, like jobs, school, friends and family, and to the airport. Our commitment to economic development provides opportunities for women and people of color to compete fairly for Sound Transit contracts. All of this helps our regional workforce grow and thrive. Go to soundtransit.org and search DBE to learn more.
Hi, my name is Mian Rice, the Diversity of Contracting Director for the Port of Seattle. As a public agency, the Port of Seattle serves the community, and our investments should benefit everyone who lives and works here. The Port is committed to equity, diversity, and inclusion, and to leveling the playing field. That means continuing to open doors to contracting opportunities to all, especially women and minority-owned and disadvantaged businesses. How can you participate? List your business in Vendor Connect, a database of contractors. Attend PortGen workshops to learn how to do business with the port. Learn more about contracting opportunities at portseattle.org. For more information on operating a concessions at Seattle Tacoma International Airport, visit lease.ctacshops.com.
Talk radio with a purpose. Alternative Talk 1150.
It was a lovely day in Seattle. The sun is shining. It shined yesterday and going to be a nice weekend. But before we go to Terrell Jackson from B. Jackson's Catfish Corner, I want to thank Sound Transit's Office of Civil Rights, Equity, and Inclusion, the City of Seattle's Purchasing and Construction Services Department, the Port of Seattle's Diversity Contracting Office, and SeaTac Bar Group, LLC. And now my guest is Terrell Jackson, owner of Jackson's Catfish Corner. He has some good news and some not so good news. His grandmother, one of the founders of Catfish Corner, Rosemary Jackson, has passed away, and there's going to be a celebration of life for her on Sunday. But I want to go to Terrell and just talk about some of the history of Catfish Corner. So welcome, Terrell Jackson, for being here today. We extend condolences to you and your family in the passing of your grandmother, who was an outstanding individual. I knew well. Matter of fact, your grandfather, Woodrow, used to fry turkeys every Thanksgiving and on Christmas right behind the original Catfish Corner on Martin Luther King and Cherry. It was Empire Way at the time. But anyway, so why don't you share a little bit about your history and your relationship and the history of Catfish Corner.
Well, thank you for allowing me to be on the show this afternoon. Well, like you said, my grandparents started Seattle's original Catfish Corner back in 1985. And my grandmother put her heart and soul into this business. And, you know, she trained me how to do this starting at 13 years old. And now here I am, 38 years old, the owner now. So she has just been a blessing to the community and to the city of Seattle. And I want to thank you guys for being such supportive people and customers and family-like, you know, during her time. And, you know, really appreciate you guys for supporting my grandmother's dream and my family's dream. I really appreciate, really appreciate the city of Seattle, what they have done for my family.
Now, you say they started in 1985. And how long were they, the Catfish Corner, on the actual corner of Cherry and Martin Luther King?
Yeah, I believe 25 years, about 30 plus years.
And then you moved to Skyway, right?
Correct. Yeah, the business shut down for a couple of years, and I rebranded the business, started on the sidewalk, you know, because I just knew that my grandparents' work, their legacy was more than just being shut down. I just had to bring it back, you know. They worked so hard for what they believed in. And so I rebranded the business, brought it back on the sidewalk. And, you know, I had my trials and tribulations with the business from Skyway to Rainier Avenue to back in the Central District on Yesler now that I have a 25-year lease here on the corner of 23rd and Jackson, you know, it's like a dream come true for my family. Jackson's on Jackson is like my slogan. You know, like I said, my grandparents, they were fighting for the Starbucks across the street that they didn't get, you know, years ago. That's a whole other story. But, you know, and for this some years later on, for me to be able to build a million-dollar restaurant on the corner of 23rd and Jackson, it's like a dream come true, like I said, and it's God's blessing that we were able to do that.
Well, I tell you right now, 23rd and Jackson, you have a lot of built-in clientele because there must be a few hundred people living within a one-block square radius of 23rd and Jackson now.
Yeah, that's a good thing. Like you said, we got, like, apartments on every corner now, you know, being built up on the new Central District. We got 300 people in each corner now. So, you know, like, we just had a group of 25 from Microsoft just leave for lunch. Like, it's a dream come true. Really, it is.
Well, you know, you did an outstanding job in catering the Martin Luther King Commemoration Committee's Black History event at Holgate Street Church of Christ. The people were very pleased with that good catfish and other items that you brought. So do you do a lot of catering as well?
Man, I do a lot of catering now. Like, I'm doing catering every other day. You know, we're catering from 25 or any up to 150. We got UW locked in. We feed the UW basketball team weekly. You know, that's a big catering order. And like I said, we do that every week. We offer, we got collard greens, beans and rice, potato salad, coleslaw, chicken wings, the great catfish. We got salads now we offer. You know, it comes all course now. We can feed anybody, all companies.
And How many people do you have working up there on 23rd Jackson? Does it fluctuate with your catering orders?
Yeah, you know, I got a strong, solid team of about six people. You know, we're very dedicated and focused on this business, and we give our all to it each and every day. And I depend on my six people daily, and we push it out no matter what size the order is. We get it done.
Well, you're going to have some additional people coming up on 22nd in Jackson because now the building, which was formerly OIC many years ago, brought here by Reverend Samuel Berry McKinney, is now the Central District Community Preservation and Development Authority. It's been known as the McKinney Center for Community and Economic Development. They're in the process of upgrading the building. There could be maybe 100 people that might like catfish in that building. So you're in a good spot to do good things. How would people go about contacting you if they had a catering order they wanted to do or get information?
If you want to do a catering order, you can call us directly at area code 425-563-5211. That's directly straight to the front office for the catering.
And I would be remiss if I didn't let people know that the Celebration of Life article for Rosemary Jackson, Terrell's grandmother, is on the front page of the this week's Seattle Medium and on the back page of this week's Seattle Facts. And it's a very detailed article in both papers. It gives you a good idea of the history of Rosemary Jackson's life, as well as her love of developing Catfish Corner, working alongside Terrell's grandfather, Woodrow Jackson, who was real good friends with John Gilmore and a lot of us back in the day when he was at the University of Washington at the time. But we go back quite a few years. But I must say, I do miss getting those fried turkeys he used to do. That might be something you might want to look into. But anyway, Terrell, thank you very much. The Celebration of Life will be Sunday from 3 to 7 at the Collective. And that's on Dexter. Where, man?
At 400. It'll be at 400 Dexter Avenue North, and it's called The Collective in downtown Seattle.
Okay, 400 Dexter Avenue is a celebration of life for Rosemary Jackson. So I will see you there, brother. I'll definitely be there for a while anyway. So Terrell, thank you very much.
Thank you.
And keep me posting on what you guys are doing so I can keep letting people know on this program, okay?
Thank you, man. Appreciate you guys for letting me out.
All right. Thanks very much, Terrell Jackson. Appreciate it. Okay. All right, I also want to thank State Representative Sharon Tomiko Santos, Ron Dixon from the MLK Gandhi Empowerment Initiative, Seattle Fire Chief Harold Scoggins, Linda Thompson from the United Negro College Fund, and Terrell Jackson, Catfish Corner. Thank you, Eric, and we'll talk to you again next week.